Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, high diving and confusion.
I think more or less 95% of the Olympic divers that dive 10 meter will just laugh at you when you ask them to jump off 20 meters. You go through all the steps and you got to be able to do it in your head first. See it, you know, like see the full trick. And he landed very short and he just passed out. So he passed out underwater and the scuba divers had to pick him up.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So I want to get right to our first guest. This is professional high diver, Ginny Van Katwijk. So what separates high diving?
There's regular diving. So it's either springboard diving, which is 1 meter and 3 meter, which you'll see at the Olympics. And then there's platform diving, which is 10 meter. And that's the highest it is at the Olympics. And then high diving, for the females, it's 20 meters. And for the males, it's 27 meters. So it's double the height for the females. Another main difference is that we don't land head first, we land feet first.
For me sitting at home, like, all right, 10 meters, 20 meters. Like, that doesn't sound like a crazy deal. But I'm assuming from your facial expression that that's a big difference.
It takes a lot longer and you start to fall faster. So whatever, like, trick or dive you're doing, you can't, like, double the amount of flips that you do from 10 to 20. Because you start falling faster, the impact is just a lot harder as well than from 10 meter.
Are there people who can do 10 meters no problem and can't do 20 or higher?
Oh, yes. Like, I think more or less 95% of the Olympic divers that dive 10 meter will just laugh at you when you ask them to jump off 20 meters.
How did you then transition into the higher dives?
My husband and I, back then, we were dating, and we found out there was, like, diving in a show, and we had never even heard of it, and it was on a cruise ship. We're like, let's try this. And on the ship, it's 17 meters, and we were regular divers. But that's when we first learned about high diving. And then we found out there were some people competing, and we slowly but surely, like, started learning high dive. Like, we made our way up there, and even, like, to get a full competitive list, it took at least 3 years after, like, doing our first dive up there. But when you're just learning in a show, I mean, it's sketchy.
Yeah, what was that first couple of times like when...
It's something like you have to overcome this fear. And sometimes I wonder, like, how, what I'm going to do in my life afterwards, knowing that in a way I'm probably addicted to, like, overcoming this fear, you know, like learning new dives is such a, it's such a buildup of emotions and like getting that dive, like getting it off. And that alone sounds funny, you know, like getting it off, like you just have to jump and go. But getting your body to do something that there's so much fear, like holding you back. And I guess that's natural, you know, your body's like protecting you. I guess your mind is saying like, this is dangerous. Don't do it. Don't do it. But you have to trust that one, your body knows what to do because you've trained all the elements like separately on lower heights before. And then, I mean, I tell myself, okay, like you've gone through all the steps. You've made all the preparations. This is it. This is what you worked for. Like, got to do it. And still, like sometimes you stand there and you just freeze. But when you do it, the best feeling. It really is.
I can see people getting addicted to that.
And I don't like to say like, oh, I'm addicted to it. But the reality is like, probably. I mean, there's no other feeling. Like, there's no feeling in the world I can compare it with. It's just like.
Like, yeah, like I did it.
I did it. Like, pat on the back for me. But for real.
Do you still feel like that every time? Like any jump?
Not any jump. It does. I don't want to say it goes away. It's still, the fear is there and you still have to be alert because, and I think that's when accidents happen, you know, like if you lose that fear completely, if you just nonchalantly go up there and throw your dives, I think it's good to have like a little bit of fear. But it's nothing like that first time.
So then how do you learn new dives? You just, do you, can you practice lower or it's like, no, you just got to do it off the big one and go for it?
No, I'm in the Fort, like I'm in a very fortunate situation that I'm training here in Fort Lauderdale. This is only one of three permanent platforms in the world. So the good thing is we have access to a full range of towers. That's 1 meter, 3 meter, sorry, 5 meter, 7 meter, 10 meter, and that's 10 meters, the Olympic height. Then we have a 15, 20, 24, 27 for the men. But yeah, there's just a process involved. Like, okay, you go through all the steps and you got to be able to do it in your head first. See it, you know, like see the full trick. If you don't see it, don't go up. Don't go up. Make sure you can see it in your head and then go through all the physical training. And then it's like you piece the things together. So like I said, like from 1.5, you need to be able to do that on 10 meter before you go up for a front double with a half twist on 20 meters.
But that difference in height doesn't like throw the whole timing off?
It shouldn't. There's a bit of a, you know, trust fall in that sense that you have to go up. And trust that your body's going to know what to do with those extra 10 meters.
So at the end of it, you do have to just like, all right, now just go for it.
Yeah. And there are certain dives where you feel like you break through a barrier, I feel like. You know, like you learn, you know, your double halves, your Barranis. But then once you learn a triple half, you do multiple flips, you come out and do the Barrani. And I feel like that's like unlocking another level of like, a range of dives altogether. And once you know you can do that, then you know, okay, if I make this dive on 10 meter to my head, I can do this up on 20 meters. And I think that confidence, like once you've done that, and this sounds so funny, it sounds like a video game, like I unlocked a new level. But once you've done that, you trust that your body will see the dive on 10 meter, see the water, and then know, okay, I need to Barrani to safely land at my feet.
So what happens if you screw one of these up?
Oh, it's not good. It's not good. I mean, I've taken my fair share of hits, I think. I've learned a new dive. And actually, coming right back to what we just spoke about, like, okay, you do it on 10 meter, you see the water. On 10 meter, you dive it in. Now you go up to 20 meter. You see the water, and I remember I learned this dive, and I was so relieved to see the water. I was like, oh my God, I did it. And I didn't actively like work the rest of the dive. So I landed like quite short. And I just had like two black eyes under my chin, my arm. Like, I mean, Most likely, not most likely, most definitely had a concussion. But I feel like in the sport of diving, this happens so much that people have a concussion. And like, I mean, I went up and did another dive before I went and iced my eyes. And like, it was bad. My husband was like, "We can't go anywhere. Can you please put sunglasses on? They're gonna think I'm beating you up." Another example, my husband, who's also a cliff diver, he did a quint half. So that's five somersaults with a half twist.
Oh God.
Oh God, yeah. So
No.
he's only, I think there's been three guys in the world to do this dive, and he's currently the only one in competition doing this dive. So it's a long time to hold on, like think about five flips holding on. And he was doing great. He was doing it in the Red Bull competition. He's, "I'm gonna nail it." And just the anticipation of getting a good entry had him come out early, and he landed very short and he just passed out. So he passed out underwater, and the scuba divers had to pick him up and bring him to the surface. And I was watching and I felt so helpless, you know? Well, I was like, "Oh my God, what am I gonna do?" And I remember thinking, like, once I got to him, because they took him off in a boat and I had to like try and find him afterwards, and he was with the ambulance people and he was strapped in. He was okay. He was awake, and he, but it just broke my heart to see him like this. And I remember coming up to him and I was like, "What were you thinking? This is five flips. Do not come out early."
It's such a married couple thing. It's like the first thing, like you do something, and the first thing you're thinking is like, oh God, they're gonna be mad at me.
I know. And actually, I felt so bad. What broke my heart most is that he probably was so embarrassed, you know? Embarrassed that that happened at that event with all the cameras and stuff. But I was just glad he was okay, you know? Like so many things, he had like kind of bruised his ribs, but everything internally was okay. And you can, if you take a hit from that high, like there's a lot more things that can go wrong.
Is it enough of an impact that you kind of have to limit, like, how many dives you're doing a day or a week or?
I try to do a maximum of three per training session, and that's actually a lot. I think most people don't even always go up to 20 meter every training session. I just know for me, like I like to get the reps in and get very comfortable and confident with my dives. But I think, I mean, I've done some, you know, sometimes you do up to six reps. Especially competition day, if you warm up and then you do your competition dives and stuff, but it really does take a toll on your body. Like the next day, your legs are going to be sore. We'll make it a point to take an ice bath right afterwards, just because even if you have a good entry, your legs take such an impact that your calves can get really sore. If you land like a little bit short or a little bit over your neck muscles, like you got to make sure your neck muscles are, it's like a whiplash if you land wrong. So actually my neck's quite tight as we speak.
I really thought you were going to say like 20 or 25.
Oh no. If you go back into the pool like three more times that week. So that's like maybe 10 a week. I think 10 a week should probably be your max.
So I'm kind of a numbers person. I hope this question makes sense in the regard that, okay,
Yeah.
so let's say 10 out of 10 is the perfect landing. You need to be what on a scale of 1 to 10 so that it doesn't like mess you up?
You need to specify mess you up. Like if you mean like my neck is sore, I had great entries yesterday, but it just happens. Like it just, it's the difference from like landing with your head tucked in and like your head out. It's just like a punch in the chin. Yeah, I don't want to say 10 out of 10, but even, okay, even if you have a nine entry, you can still like technically hurt yourself, I guess.
Nobody's ever, has anybody ever died doing it?
Not in the professional sense, but I'm sure it has happened off that height as well. Yeah.
So, like, when you make an entry into there, are you kind of like tightening the whole body?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you see a picture, every muscle is tight. It's crazy. Not to mention the beautiful face going in the water.
Pure grimace.
Everything needs to be tight. Because you need to attack the water, because if not, the water is going to attack you and just literally destroy you.
So you're kind of trying to like actively hit the water.
Yes. Yeah, and you can see the difference. Like sometimes, you know, you just kind of the water hits you and it can really like cause you to move in ways that you don't want to move underwater. Like you need to be tight and attack the water.
What do you think makes you good at it? Like, what separates you from other people who do it?
Gosh, this is such a hard question. I don't know. Like I had the diving background and you know, then I transitioned to high diving. So it was still all over the place a little bit and I didn't have consistent training facilities. And just in the past like 4 months, I've just been consistently training here and I can see the difference. I can feel the difference. It's night and day and I feel so much more confident up there. I think I have improved so much. So I'm really excited to see like now where this will take me. But what sets me apart? I mean, okay, here's what sets me apart. I'm the only female in the world to do a front arm stand triple with a 1.5 twist, which is a really cool dive, I think. And it's cool that I'm the only one to do this dive.
Is that a lot different, like jumping off of it backwards or doing it off of a handstand?
Yeah, and actually, so I do. For the people that are watching, if this is the platform and this is me in a handstand, and here's my head, here's my back. I would be, you know, in a handstand, my back facing the water, my front facing the platform. I have to flip that way. So it's quite hard to create a flipping motion that
Oh
direction.
yeah, like you're not turning in,
Yeah.
you're turning out over, so to speak.
Yeah. So I have to like create like kind of a kip movement to like get the somersault going. And it's quite hard because, you know, you're in a handstand this way and your, you know, your wrist hinges don't want to go the other way, you know, like kind of pushing against. Whereas if you do a back handstand, it's like a falling, you have the falling momentum with you and you can finish off your hands with the push. So the handstand I'm doing it's a bit different.
So we have some listener submitted questions.
Okay.
Does anybody ever ask, why are we doing this?
All the time, all the time. And actually, mostly on social media. Like, I just had this video go viral, and the majority of the questions is why? Why would you do this? And even like my parents-in-law say, why are you guys still doing this? Get a real job. You know? I think it's the adrenaline. I think it's the feeling of accomplishment when you one, when you learn these dives, but then two, when you are doing these dives regularly and you doing them good, you know, it feels great. Like you leave practice going, that was great. I did good today. This sounds so stupid, but it's the little things that like the little battles that you overcome daily with yourself, you know, and it can be I've tried to really like bring it down and make it really simple. Like, okay, today is windy. That kind of sucks for diving. But you know, this can happen in a competition. So let's make the best of it. Let's take this as opportunity to practice in this windy setting. And then you do your dives. They might not be great, but in the end, it's like, okay, we did the dive. We stuck to the plan. And like, I think that's what makes me feel good, like sticking to the plan and seeing that it's working out.
That
I'm
makes
not sure if
sense.
that completely answered your question as to why, because no, it's not for the money, it's not for the fame, it's not, it's purely for myself.
How do different divers look at the high divers? Like, do the 1 meter people look at the high divers differently? Like, who's kind of the cool kid in the diving community?
It's not the cool kid, the crazy ones. I think they definitely think we're crazy. But you know, now that we're training with them, like for example, the ones that we're training with in the pool, like they realize like it's all the same. Like it's the same learning. That's not true. Okay, let me rephrase that. Because I was gonna say it's the same as learning a dive on 1 meter or on 3 meter. It's the same except for exponentially. like scarier and overcoming that hump or that feat is that much more rewarding.
How deep does the water have to be to do this? Like, you need this much water.
At least, people always ask this. So on the cruise ship, the water is not very deep. It's about 14 feet deep, which is not deep enough. We always hit the bottom. Like every single time we come down and either you like kind of scoop so you don't like go straight down, or you, as soon as you hit the water, kind of tuck. So it like slows you down and you just land in a like a tuck on the bottom and then you push off. But you touch the bottom every single time, which is it's okay on the cruise ship. It's 17 meters. You're not doing like super crazy dives. It's okay. 20 meters, like the competition pool, I think it's 6 meters deep. I never touch the bottom. Some people do. Some people go all the way down, but I never touch the bottom. So
what's the highest you jump from?
Probably 23 meters. So how many feet?
70. Probably, yeah, like 75 feet.
Yeah, and that was off a cliff. We had to clear a little bit. It wasn't the height that was scary. It was like the shimmy up. We had to put like a little harness on and shimmy up to the spot and then shimmy out of your harness on the little cliff and then do the dive and clear a little bit, like maybe a meter and a half.
But then somebody that goes, you know, super high, like I think I looked up the world record was like 192 feet. Is that even like the same world in the sense, or is that more daredevil stuff?
Definitely more daredevil stuff. And they don't do like the type of dives that we do. They usually either, I think the guy holding the record now, he did a jump or like a reverse flip or something like that. But that's definitely a whole nother round. That's not for me. I'm okay. I'm 20 meters.
What do you think then about kind of, because you know, everybody sees like the YouTube videos and this stuff on social media, people just like launching off high cliffs and stuff like that. Like when you see that kind of stuff, what do you think?
As long as you know what you're doing and as long as you know, like inspect the water before, please inspect the water before, because you don't want to land on something or bottom out and have somebody in the water as a safety. If you don't land good, but if you do all of that, please feel free, like have a blast, but be careful.
Can you see this?
Yes.
This is crazy to me. That to me, looking at it, looks like you're going to jump. You're jumping. How far is that from where you're standing to the water? Like
56 feet. So it's 17 meters. And this was actually right after I had come back from competition. So I hadn't been on the ship in like 2 months. That was my first training dive back. And it's no joke that you see God, I'm shaking, dude. You know, like I do get scared. And you know, people ask, like, do you still get scared? All the time. And yeah, that pool, I think it's one of the scariest, honestly, in the cliff diving or high diving scenes. Like, because there's, you know, you see the 10 meter underneath of you. You see the little platform, like, in front of my feet.
Yeah, so you can 10 meters. Really tell the difference when you see the, like, oh, that's a lot higher.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's some stuff sticking out. And in the middle, they have like what they call like the center lift, because the floor is like a stage as well. So it moves up and down. And that center lift is actually not all the way down either. So you can't land there, you know. I don't think you're ever, like, people will get close to it. Nobody's landed on it. But it's just a mind game. You know, you have to think of so many things already that when they throw other things in there, it just makes it that much more scary, I guess.
Is any of that kind of camera angle where it makes it look a little bit scarier than it really is? Or like, no, that's what it looks like.
No, that's what it looks like. The camera is on like 0.5, just so you could see like the whole setting, you know, like so you see the whole pool and everything. But yeah, that's it. Actually, it's just this camera that's on 0.5. The first one, I think, wasn't. Wow. Just so you get everything in there.
Is that a pretty, like for you, is that like, that's a cake dive for me. I can do that in my sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one I do in the show. Like wake me up in the middle of the night. I can do it. No problem. I mean, that was just a slow motion. My front arm sand, I don't even know. I don't think I posted it yet. My new arm sand dive. But yeah, that was one of my new dives as well. It's a front triple with a 1.5 twist. But here you can really see how deep the pool is.
Yeah, you really punch through there, right?
So, yeah, and you can see like how everything has to be tight and how fast you go down. I mean, look at that. So I'm pretty close. Like, I think I could touch the, like, wait for it and touch the ground. I just open up and that slows it down underwater.
So yeah, that's what you're doing on the sides is like practicing all the different movements.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and that's the preparation for the handstand up there. So, that's the tower in Fort Lauderdale. It's a great facility. Like, it's brand new. It's absolutely, I don't know why they don't host like events there every year. It's a no-brainer because now usually for like a World Cup or World Championship, they build a pool out of scaffolding and like make an above-ground pool more or less with scaffolding and everything, which costs a ton just to set up, whereas this facility is already there. Yeah, so this is the day I learned this dive. And, you know, I hurt my elbow doing the preparations for this dive on 10 meter. And I had to have surgery. And that was like less than 2 years ago. So now I did the lead up, not on 10 meter. I did the lead up to my feet on 7 meter and skipped that transition. And it finally got this dive off. And it was just, I don't know. I like had so much like fear resistance to this dive. Like I could tell that I was like, had to do like the preparations on 5 meter, even like front 1.5 with a full twist. And I could just tell that I started like, you know, procrastinating and like not wanting to do it. And for sure, those are all signs that I was just scared, you know, push comes to shove. I was scared. And I think one evening I just sat down and like just wrote down what I was scared of, like, and it all came down to like, it made no sense to be scared. You know, yes, I'm scared, but I did all the preparations and you're ready for this. And what is the worst that can happen? You know, like going through all of it. And I think that helped so much because then the next practice I came in, I had a plan. Do your preparations, take it up. And I just stuck to the plan and did it. And I was so excited. Like, that was it. It was like breakthrough. But it took probably a good 2 weeks of like real resistance. And I couldn't figure out like this resistance. Like I had to really write it all down and get it out for me to just like work past that, I guess.
Do you think it will become an Olympic sport? Do you think it'll go or not?
I think so. I think so. But it's just actually we were really, really hoping it was going to be in the, I mean, a couple of years ago, we were excited to think it was going to be in the Paris Olympics. It's not. And then we thought, oh, for sure, LA. And it didn't. Like they put in, I think, flag football and cricket. And guys, no offense to flag football, but that's what you play in elementary school.
That's pretty much all the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you think that we missed or what's kind of coming up next for you?
What's coming up next? So season's about to start next month. First we go to Greece for one of the Red Bull stops. I'm not diving there. So Red Bull's a bit complicated. There's like 8 permanent divers and then there's 4 wild cards each competition. So my husband got a wild card for the first stop. I'll go to coach and, you know, support him as well as train. And then my next competition will be in Boston at, hold on, let me look at the calendar, on the 8th of June. So if you're in Boston, first week of June, come check it out, Red Bull Cliff Diving. And yeah, I'm pretty excited for that. This season should be good.
When did you start the towel thing?
Oh gosh, probably at least 10 years ago. So while I was in college, I started making like these tie-dye chamois and then I brought them to the pool and the kids at the club team were like, we want to buy one. And so I just started and then I sold some at some competitions and it's just grown ever since. And it, sometimes it's a bit hard to like keep up with it when I'm on the cruise ship, because I work on the cruise ship sometimes. But I've managed to keep it up, and it's just growing and growing over the years. So now I do some team chamois. I made the chamois for, so to explain for your audience. So chamois are, if you ever watch diving on TV, they always have this, well, it looks like a car towel. They use it to dry off. So you're not completely dry, but like dry enough to where you don't slip out of your dives. If you're doing like a tuck shape or a pike, so you don't slip out, and you know, to stay warm after your dive, so you don't need a towel every time you use that to dry off, wring it out, use it again. But yeah, so I customize them, I tie-dye them, I do like university teams. I did the ones for the, I'm doing some for the US Olympic trials, and then the British Olympic team is getting them in their Olympic kit, so it's pretty cool.
I did always wonder, like, why are they drying off? You're just going right back in the pool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's two ways, like for sure, to kind of keep warm, it helps. And yeah, you want that. You don't want to be too dry. Like, think about like grabbing a tuck and being super dry, you could slip out. But also if you're really wet, you slip out. So it's like that moist in between. I know people hate this word, but but yeah, it's like when you dry off with like this chamois cloth, it's like the right consistency of like having good grip.
I want to thank Ginny so much for joining us. If you want to connect with her, we have linked to her on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included her information in the episode description. And if you want to see some of these dives that we're talking about, they really are incredible to see how high it is and just the sheer amount of precision that goes into this. The YouTube version of this episode will be live on May 2nd at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. Would you rather open a door or close it?
I think there's more satisfaction out of opening a door, so I'll say opening.
Oh, I think there's more satisfaction closing it. It's like a job well done. You're back inside your house, you're back inside your location, you finish the day, you close the door.
I feel like this is some metaphorical test. No, I like opening a door. Opening a door is much more fulfilling to me than closing a door, for sure.
Maybe this speaks to the where we're at in our lives. In that I feel like I have too many things going on and would rather close a task, close the door. And you feel like you have you need a new beginning. Is that why you'd rather open a door?
I was really just saying that because one of the best feelings that I've had recently, aka since it's been getting warm out in Michigan, is opening the door at like 8 a.m. and the cold air comes in and it's just nice and refreshing.
I agree. I wasn't actually listening. I was looking at a text message. I'm not even sure what you just said.
See what I'm saying? See, that's that. You couldn't even go 30 seconds without being a douchebag.
That's not negative. That was honesty.
We're recording a podcast and you're looking at text messages. It's
from my wife. I had to look at it.
That's the definition of a douchebag.
What if it was important? What if this text message said, I need help right now, and I didn't look at it, and it was from my wife, and you were sitting over there, oh, well, you didn't hear what I said.
Well,
The one being negative. Being negative.
No way. Anyways, let's give some shout outs. Jan Hope Master. We'll start with that. That sounds like a real name. Reese Jory. Simon Matheson. Elvin Nestor. Don't think that's a real name either. Ozzy Triana. Daphne Monroe. Elizabeth Forrester. Cian Johnson. Jasper Harkness. Sean Shank. I don't know why that. I love the alliteration there. Plus, Shank for some reason made me smile. Thomas Pertle and Chris Mayer. They get the shout outs of the week. All right, let's go back to an oldie but a goodie here for your little segment.
Switching it up again, huh?
Yeah, I felt there was a few topics that came out this past week that I just want to get your opinion on. How do you feel about armchair quarterbacks?
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I think that like this, okay, are we talking about literal, are we talking in a sports thing, or are we talking more of in a societal thing? Because I can do both. I just want to know which direction you want me to go down.
I mean, I was kind of talking about sports, but if you want to give your opinion on both, please feel free.
I think that armchair quarterbacking is ridiculous because there is a 99.9% chance that somebody on the internet talking does not know more about experts. We have endless experts on this show, and without regard, there is an endless supply of people that somehow know more than the person who studies this thing for a living. Mm-hmm. I think that we have completely devalued expertise and have somehow transitioned into a society where knowing about something somehow means you know less about it. So in my mind, armchair quarterbacks are always wrong. And when we look at sports, like, there was 50,000 different NFL mock drafts that people put up and spent months talking about it. And somehow, despite all of these people getting paid millions of dollars for this and doing it for a living, every single one of them was wrong. Like, the people... And I was fascinated about watching the NFL draft, to continue this on, when they had Nick Saban on there. Like, somebody who was an actual professional football coach. You could clearly tell that he knew what he was talking about so much more than anybody else did. Like, people are experts for a reason, and how we've suddenly decided that people who are experts know less than just somebody who can Google something on the internet is unreal to me, because you have knowledge without context. Expertise is knowing when something applies.
Okay, episode over. We'll see you guys next week.
I was heated about this.
You were heated about that. Wow.
Oh, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts how somehow being an expert in something doesn't count for anything anymore, because somebody can Google it, find one single iota of a fact that they think agrees with them, and then use that to somehow ruin the entire argument of somebody else. Like, climate change isn't real. It was 2 degrees colder on January 6th last year than it was the year before. Like, well, that they don't know enough to know they know nothing.
I mean, listen, everyone just wants to, everybody wants to feel probably that they, you know, can be a voice, that they have a voice. However, I agree with you in that they don't go about that the right way. There are no experts usually on topics that speak about that topic and just give blind opinions or facts. It's usually all scientifically backed or research based, right?
Yeah, they know what they're talking about. Yeah, I think that we've great. That's an interesting thing. That honestly, to go on a complete rant, like you and I think this is potentially like an issue for our society moving forward. Is that you and I grew up with like gatekeepers. If you saw somebody kind of talking about something on the news or being interviewed or writing a book or posting or whatever, they generally knew what they're talking about. Like you had much more reliable sources. Now we don't really have that anymore. And like anybody's opinion can be launched anywhere. And it's almost like the algorithm, by not knowing what you're talking about, means you go farther than anybody else. So we've essentially amplified the idiots in our society and downplayed the people who actually know what's talking about. It's a problem.
I was going to bring up an influencer who, so the NFL draft was in Detroit. You know, if no one in the world was aware of that, which I don't know how you wouldn't have been. And I swear probably the largest cheers other than the Lions' first round draft pick was for an influencer named Sketch.
Oh, I
know nothing about this person. I had to look them up. I still don't really understand why they're so popular and why they got to be front and center at the NFL draft, but
I don't know much about it, but I think that's kind of an inspiring story. I think that they're like a really nice person. They've got a good story. But I think that you need to adjust the reality that social media people are now the most famous people in society. I think that like YouTubers and influencers are now the most famous people in the world. It's not artists and musicians anymore. It's now them.
I see. So I'm reading a little bit about Sketch, and apparently he is a gamer / influencer and has almost 1 million followers and plays Madden. So good for him.
Hey man, take what if you get an opportunity, run it.
All right, let's see. I would feel like I was doing a disservice to all of us gambling losers out there, if I didn't get your opinion on this, but the Kentucky Derby.
Is that this weekend?
It is this upcoming weekend, yes.
I have no interest in that.
I
have no interest in things where an animal or a vehicle does more work. Like,
well, I mean, I think it's, listen, you know what, we should probably have this debate, because I feel like for horse racing, it's, you know, if there is a saddle jockey, which these horses have, it's teamwork, right? It's both of them.
Which one's running?
The horse.
Okay.
But who's directing them? Who's steering them?
I think the horse can handle running straight. They've somehow managed to survive for however long horses have survived. I think if you took the jockey off and just like put something down there, they would probably run. They'd probably do just fine without the jockey.
Nobody,
this is our attempt to pretend like we were involved in this sport.
I mean, I don't know if I agree. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm pro, like, you know, beating the horse with one of those whip things.
Yeah, I don't think most people are.
But I also think that that's just part of it. You know, you tell the horse to speed up, you tell the horse to slow down. I don't know, it's all, you know, yes, but the horse could run straight on its own, of course. But adding the human element to it just adds another layer of competition.
I just feel like whatever the human element is, besides for maybe like training and diet and nutrition, and I think they're probably putting something else in the horse. Who knows, right? Like, how do you know that's as fast as the horse can run? Like, oh no, you got to slow it down here. Do you know? Did you talk to the horse? Like, you might be, they might be a lot faster. I mean, without factoring the weight in, right? Like, what do you need the person for? The horse might be just fine without it. The dogs do it just fine. You can tell me the horse is a horse that much dumber than a dog? Like, no. These horses, you got to have somebody on their back. They can't handle just running in a straight line like dogs can.
Well, to be fair, I don't know much about dog racing, and I don't know the distances, but horses run a mile. They run 2 miles. Like, you know, they run, I mean, you can't expect a horse just to run in a straight line for, you know, a mile and a quarter. Like, it's not going to do it.
I think they'd be fine. I think the horse is going to be all right. And I think it would be better, quite frankly, if we just let the horse do what they want. The horse doesn't want to finish the race, the horse doesn't finish the race. I've never gotten really excited about it, the Kentucky Derby. It's just one of those things that, like...
This will probably be an unpopular opinion, maybe not, but I actually enjoy horse racing. One of the best things I've done was go to a horse racing track. It's a lot of fun. And... have some beers, bet on some horses. It's a good night.
Okay. No, I understand it from that standpoint. I just don't, like, I'm not going to look at this and be like, wow, what athletes, what trainers are around. Like, the horse is doing everything. The horse gets the least amount of credit and does the most work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. Anyways, all right. So this caught my eye. Would you do this? So at the Nashville Predators hockey game, during one of the intermissions, apparently this is a thing now, they take a dead frozen catfish and somebody opens up a beer, pours it into the catfish, and then chugs the beer out of the catfish.
I mean, that's awesome. I'm not going to do it, but I'll definitely watch somebody else do it. Like, that just seems like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Well,
I don't want to drink anything. I mean, no. I'm not drinking. No. Uh-uh.
Well, there is a viral video for any of you out there who want to check it out. Just look up Nashville Predators catfish chug, and there will be a few of them that pop up.
Okay. Would you do it?
Yeah, I would do it for sure.
Oh, no way. Catfish beer.
I mean,
no.
Why not? I don't think I'd do it if I'd have to pay. But, like, I would do it, you know, if somebody was like, hey, come chug a beer out of this dead frozen catfish. That sounds terrible.
No, I'm definitely not paying for it. Like, you got to pay me. And then, I mean, how much do they give them? They give them money, or is it just like, you going to do it or not?
I didn't see that they got paid for it, no.
Oh, yeah, I'm not doing that. No, I'm good, bro.
All right, let's see. I felt like I just brought this up because you say that you are a Buffalo Bills fan. So I know we've had some sporty topics here, but so the Buffalo Bills drafted a player in this past NFL draft that had never played professional football before. You okay with that? Does it matter to you? Do you care?
He's probably some kind of freak athlete, I'm assuming, right? Like, if somebody's just that athletic and that big or that kind of stuff, like, yeah, he's probably fine. I mean, yeah. Right? Like, if you're going to, like, he's never played football, but he's 6'5 and runs a 4'0 and benches 450 reps. Like, I think we'll okay taking him.
He's,
he doesn't know what they're doing, man. It's not the Detroit Lions over here.
Yeah. Super Bowl champs. Former this or is, future. Sorry.
This is my, okay. I have a problem with you and Detroit.
Okay.
Does Eminem have to be involved in every single thing that Detroit does? You guys got to get another person. Detroit has to have another person besides Eminem, just like, oh, it's in Detroit. We'll get Eminem out. You got to have one other person besides him. He can't be the spokesperson for all of Detroit for every single thing that happens there.
But I mean, currently, I mean, why not? I mean, obviously.
Get somebody else. You got to have one other person. It's such a great city. It's so amazing, sure, according to you. And the only person you have is Eminem, who has to do it for every single thing.
I mean, there's plenty of I don't know why he's front and center. He's a huge Lions fan. I mean, Big Sean was also there. There was some Motown legends that were there. Listen, it used to be Kid Rock and Eminem, but we all know Kid Rock's political affiliations and how he's kind of done some crazy stuff. No matter what line you're on, it's a little extreme. So he's been kind of put to the back burner. But it used to be, you know, Kid Rock and Eminem were kind of like the two, I don't want to say pop stars or whatever, but like, you know, faces of Detroit when there was a huge event. Now, Kid Rock's out of the picture. Eminem has kind of had a little bit of a rebirth, and he's back. Like, you know, he just, yeah, I do agree with you. But I feel like people only notice that because the Detroit Lions have been successful the last year, and the last year only, pretty much, of the last two decades.
Okay, you gotta have you gotta have somebody new by next year. Eminem can't do every single thing.
I mean, it's gonna. I mean, you could name there's five sports stars in the city. Ah, well, that's not true.
I can't think of a single one. Honestly, I can't. I don't know a single. That's the problem, right? Like Eminem is the only guy. Like,
well,
they're all sitting around. Like, get somebody from Detroit. Like,
it was Eminem and Barry, right? Barry Sanders. They were kind of the two headliners of the draft for representing Detroit.
Yeah, but Barry Sanders from Wichita, my hometown, by the way, so please don't try to take him.
Sure is.
He doesn't live in Detroit, I don't think.
The guy the Bills drafted, former rugby player, 6'7", 300 pounds, and he can run a 4.7 40. So yes.
Yeah, well, yeah,
he is a goddamn freak of nature.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Pick him up.
Like and for those of you out there that aren't into sports, like that's a freak. Like that is a freak human being.
Yeah.
I don't even know how else to say it. Like he's just that much of a freak. All right, let's see here. I'm trying to pick one that isn't sports related because I looked on these and I realized that most of these are sports related. Do you give a rat's ass about Taylor Swift releasing another album?
No.
I mean, because I think we're the only two people in the world that don't care at all.
I think that this phase is probably ending because like, I think that that's one of those things that's kind of media manufactured. Yeah. She's very popular. A lot of people know who you are. A lot of people like her music, but I think that it's much more a public relations, media relations thing and what you're just constantly hearing about it because like, I don't know. It's just one of those things that we're going to keep going until you have like, right? Like, what's really happening? Are people really this interested? Or does the media just want to hammer this nail home until it's so far dead in the wood that we can't do anything about it? So, I don't care. I'm not going to listen to it.
All right, let's wrap this up here. Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift. How many more months you give their relationship?
Well, she's had a new album come out. 6 months.
I think they are rocky by the next Super Bowl, so I'll give them less than a year.
Oh, okay. Do you think they make it out of 2024?
Yes, but I think there's rumors that, you know, what's happening? Are they not happy? You know, things like that. But I don't think they last much into 2025, which is also crazy thinking that next year is going to be 2025. That's kind of insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. I generally like odd-numbered years more than I like even-numbered years. I like odd numbered years for my personal age, and I like odd number. No. No. Wait. I know I like odd numbered years for my personal age. Like, I like 33 more than I like 34 or 32. And I guess even numbered years, except unless it's like a 5. Even or a 5 divisible by 5. Those are my favorite years.
Great. Let's end on this. Vampire facials.
What is... God dang.
Have you heard of those?
What is this? Are they taking blood out of you?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of... There's a serious part of this, which I want to get out of the way right now, and then we can have a little fun. So... 3 women have been infected with HIV because of these transfusions. But
that's a problem.
Essentially, what's happening is exactly what you said. People are getting blood taken out of other parts of their body or other areas, and it's being injected into their faces. And in New Mexico, at an unauthorized spa, they were using the same needle and have given 3 people HIV. But without that said, vampire facials just sound terrible. Anything that ends in facial just sounds a little suspect.
I generally think it's a bad idea to mess with things you don't understand, especially when it comes to like nature, where it's our bodies or the environment. Don't mess with things that took millions of years to develop. Don't mess with them. Leave them alone, right? Or be prepared to pay the price.
Here's what I wanted to say about this is look at Google search if you really want to know what a vampire facial looks like.
Gross, dude.
Kim Kardashian vampire facial, and it should bring up a photo from a decade ago, and that's what that is.
Oh, God. So they're putting blood back into your face or just smearing your blood?
No,
other places.
For those of you that didn't do that, the picture of her kind of it looks like she smeared blood on her face, but that's not what happens. They inject it into your skin, and it's supposed to, you know, give you healthier skin. I don't know.
How is that supposed to make it so your own blood somehow being put somewhere else? Like, why would that make any sense? Like, your blood's already in your body. Why would putting it? Like, it's already moving around. Anyway.
Yeah, there's like a scientific thing where they separate. Bless me. They separate the platelets and stuff. It's a whole scientific thing. But anyways, vampire facials. All right, are we ready?
Yeah. All right. I'm interested to hear what you're going to have to say. So I don't know exactly how to phrase our top 5.
Wait.
Our top...
Wait. That's not what I was asking you if you were ready for.
You have to learn how to use a calendar.
I am.
What day is...
Wait. May 1st is Wednesday.
Oh, I need to... Oh, my knuckle trick of 30th, 31st. I didn't know... Okay, I'm sorry you didn't have your usual level of excitement in which the only thing that you want to do the whole episode is talk about Candle of the Month. But since I forgot, are you ready?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, I'm ready.
The outlaw candle connoisseur rides again. Candle of the month.
Woo! And just to think, you all out there were patiently waiting, and Nick almost forgot about us. But
I did almost forget. That's
let
amazing.
Me saddle you all back in. We're gonna take a trip over to Yankee Candle, one of my more favorite candles. That I've had the pleasure of lighting in probably the last decade, and I've been lighting candles for a long time. Go to Yankee Candle. It's called Flowers in the Sun, and you know, you can get it all kinds of styles, ounces, wicks. Obviously, I'm going with 3 wicks, and it's exactly what you think it is. It's you get a remarkably sweet taste of different flowers. It's warm. Light it like at maybe midday, and then when you're like when the sun goes down, it's like the sun never went down. Don't let the sun go down on me, one guy once said. You know what I'm saying? Check it out. Flowers in the Sun, Yankee Candle. That's the May 2024 Candle of the Month.
Okay. Okay, how do you feel about this Candle of the Month? Did you give a description?
I did, but apparently you were too busy texting again.
I was looking at the poll results. I was trying to do two things, thinking that I could pay attention to what the poll results were and listen to you, but you finished so quickly. I was like, oh, I got at least like 2 minutes. John's going to take a while.
You are. I know. You are a terrible, terrible multitasker.
I'm not doing very well. I'm not doing very well today. I thought I could do it, but I couldn't do it. Where would you rank this candle, though, as Candle of the Months go in terms of, now obviously it's Candle of the Month. It's a great candle.
It's a great candle.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, 4 candles of the month, where would you put this as a Candle of the Month?
Oof. I mean, like I said, which you were too busy not listening to, it's probably a top 10 candle of the last decade for me.
Whoa. Yeah,
it's you know, one thing I didn't actually mention.
Of the last decade?
So like I said, it has a very sweet aroma of flowers. It's called Flowers in the Sun, but it also has almost like a sugar cookie after scent, which it just brings it all around. It's fantastic.
How do you feel that in probably one of your most important candles of the month, that number one, I forgot about it. Number two, I stopped paying attention while you did a very succinct and good response and good analysis of your Candle of the Month. Basically, how do you feel about the fact that you did the best job you've ever done on Candle of the Month and I wasn't paying attention to notice at all?
I mean, like you said earlier, as a human being, I'm used to people not recognizing what a good job is. So I'm used to it. But you know what? I feel good about it, and that's all that matters.
That's why. See, that's why you're an open door guy. You want to keep the door open. I have the results for the poll if you want to listen to it. 56% of people say they would rather open a door. 33% say they would rather close the door.
Okay.
11% said they have no preference. They don't care if they're opening or closing the door.
And those people are the ones who are playing video games in their mom's basement still.
Yeah. Or they just don't have doors in their household. I actually had somebody that I held a door for and waited a second. Not a lot, but I probably waited 2 seconds, held the door, and they just walked right past and didn't say a word.
I mean, if that happens, I usually say something, you know, like, hey, you're welcome. And sometimes I don't get a response.
I'm too fascinated. I just want to watch them quietly and be like, what are they going to do next? Like, that's breaking the social contract. Okay. I don't know how to describe our top five. Are you ready for our top five?
I think I did it wrong, but we'll see. So
I'm not really sure exactly how to say what it is. But basically, top five things we're constantly confused about. Like, no matter how many times the right answer gets explained to us or how many times we have to figure this out, we're still confused about what this thing is or how to do it. What's your number five?
Okay. All right, well, here we go. My number five is I'm always forgetting how to remember, like remembering people's names.
Oh, I don't even try.
I don't even try to
remember people's names.
I'm the worst. And unfortunately, I kind of nickname them. So I'll be like, hey, Roger. And he'll be like, no, my name's David. And then like 2 days later, I'll be like, oh, hey, Brian. He'll be like, nope, name's still David.
What do you think is worse? Getting somebody's name wrong who you've met many times before or not knowing the name of somebody who you've met many times before?
Getting the name wrong of somebody that you just met. I mean, if I know you, right, and we've hung out or if I've seen you plenty of times, that's on me then. And if I forget it, like, I'm the douchebag. But if I just met you once or twice and then maybe I bump into you a couple months later, like, that's on you at that point. That's not on me.
Some people are really good. There's a guy that I run into at the park who knows like my name, my wife's name, my kids' names, everything, and I don't know what his name is, and I've been running into him for the last 3 years. He's great with names. I can't remember. I still don't know. My number five is arrivals and departures at the airport.
Okay.
Whenever I go to the airport, I really have to like stop and think for a second if I'm supposed to – am I arriving? Am I departing? Because I'm arriving for a departing flight. Or I'm arriving to pick up someone who is arriving. Like, I really always have to stop and think for a minute. Like, okay, wait, which one am I going to? arrivals or departures?
That's actually a great one. And I have actually gone to departures more times on accident. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm here. I don't know how I got here. I'm supposed to be going to arrivals, but I guess you're coming out now through the departure doors because I'm here. So
all you got to do is go upstairs or downstairs. It's not a big deal. Like, I'm coming to pick you up at the airport. You can hop your ass on an escalator or an elevator for 5 seconds and then walk out the other door. You have to accommodate that person.
It really is, man. It really is.
I can't keep it straight, man. I can never keep that straight. What's your number four?
I think my list is going to tell a lot about me, so I apologize in advance. But my number four is basically using my phone for, like, you know, as payment. Like when you use Apple Pay or, like, you know, like you're at Starbucks and they you have, like, their app. I never know, like, really what to do. And I'm always nervous about it, and I never think it goes through. So sometimes I've gone to where, like, you know, they scan it, and I'll look at it, and I'll go, do you need to scan it again? Like, is it did it take? And then they look at me like I'm an idiot. So it's all good. It's all fair.
It's very difficult to know that at the age of 35 plus for both of us, we have already crossed the line where we won't understand new technology. We've become our parents, and we don't understand it anymore.
I don't have this on the list, but it's similar aspect is like, you know, holding up the card to the card reader and touchless card readers. Like, it'll say card, you know, card read, and I'll be like, but it didn't make a noise. What is that? Do I need to stick it in now? I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Oh, wow. I'm not that bad, dude. It makes like a beep noise. It goes beep.
It's pretty terrible. It's pretty terrible.
I really don't understand what we've done with credit cards in the sense that, like, we used to have to, like, sign our lives away and prove it was us, and now we just walk past the thing. Like, how is that more secure than what we used to do? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, no. My number four is any kind of instructions, assembly instructions. I don't know if I've ever assembled something and not had to backtrack and fix a mistake. No matter how closely I follow the instructions, I have to backtrack and fix at least one mistake.
So I have that on my list a little bit higher. So I'll talk about it when we get up there. My number three, and this is going to sound really terrible, but it's really just traffic laws. Like, I get confused. Like,
oh yeah, that's a good one.
Each state has different traffic laws. In Michigan, like, you can turn left on a red light if it's only one-way traffic. Or, like, you know, you can turn at an intersection if it's only north and south traffic. It's like, how many rules? And you go to different states, there's different, you know, different rules, obviously. I just get confused sometimes, and I just kind of drive how I want to drive.
That's a really good one, because I've been driving for 20-plus years and still am not entirely sure who's supposed to go first on a four-way stop.
I mean, yeah, right there, right? I mean, I'm not even at a four. I could be at a two-way stop. And if the person has their blinker on to turn, you know, left or right, I'm just like, do you go? I got here first, I think.
I think it's the person who gets there first, or if you get there at the same time, it's the car to the right.
I have no idea. Like,
but that doesn't make any sense, because what if all four cars get there at the same time?
Right? And I mean,
who's going to go? Because...
Well, then you end up doing one of those weird wavy things where they go, but then you think you're supposed to go because they waved you through, and then you're both in the middle. It's just, yeah. So traffic, you know, traffic laws are my number three.
I've adopted a new strategy in that I give people the wave, but if they give me a wave, I don't hesitate and I just go.
You just floor it.
I mean, I get it. I'm like, I'm going. I'm not waiting.
Why is that guy going 40? All right. What's your number three?
The difference between effect and effect with the E and effect with the A, I still don't understand it. Never am entirely sure. And so I'll just write instead, I'll use the word impact. It's going to impact a lot of people because I'm not sure, like, I don't understand it. And I will never understand it.
That's your PR days coming out right there, I think.
Still don't know what it is.
I don't
never
know.
Never going to get it. Well, I get it, but I don't have confidence. I don't have enough confidence. Go ahead.
Got to have confidence, man.
I don't.
So my number two is that's where I put the, like, not being able to follow an instruction manual.
Yeah. But do you still have trouble if you, like, actually kind of, like, no, I'm going to slow down and try.
Yeah. I could literally spend... I remember one time when I was a younger man, I spent probably 6 hours putting together an IKEA dresser, only to have it lean like the Tower of Pisa, and I had no idea how, like, what I messed up, and I took my time all day to put that stupid thing together.
Because there's always, like, a little detail in the instruction that, no, this one screw has a small mark on the bottom of it that you were supposed to somehow notice in the bottom left-hand corner, and you missed that.
Yeah.
Like,
or like, the 3D renderings are, like, kind of weird, and you don't really know which hole the pegs go in, and it's just a lot. It's a lot.
It's never as helpful as it should be. Is that your number two? Is this my number two?
Your number two.
My number two is the difference between medium and mild. I can never remember if medium is hotter than mild or if mild is hotter than medium. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I feel like mild should be hotter than medium, but it's not.
I mean,
I'm always confused by this.
I'm going to sound like a snob here, but some sauces that are supposed to be not hot to me can be a little spicy. And, you know, if you go to B-dubs and you get, say, like the Blazin', like that's never really been that hot to me. So I don't even go by like a hot scale anymore. I just go by like what tastes good.
But is mild supposed to be hotter than medium?
Yes.
Okay. I just can't keep that straight. Okay. It's your number one.
So my number one is basically just I can never remember, never know how to do it correctly, but it's just passwords, man. It's just remembering passwords, and you have to reset the password, which takes 12 minutes, and then I set a password that I ultimately end up forgetting the next day anyways.
Yeah, there's a lot of times where I just automatically go to reset password. Like, I'm not remembering this. But don't you have, like, a form password you use for pretty much everything and then just add one number to the end of it?
I do, but then I get cute, and I'm like, well, I don't want hackers to hack into my bank account with the same password, so I'll change up the password, and it's probably not very smart. Because hackers can get into anything they want.
I don't really worry about that. I really don't worry about that, because I feel like everybody who wants your information has probably already gotten it. And I feel like if your account does get hacked, well, then you just, like, hey, my account got hacked. And the bank gives you back. Like, I just really don't feel like this is that big of a deal.
It isn't anymore. I mean, you are correct. It's not that big of a deal anymore. The bank or whatever institution will usually get back at you pretty quick.
My number one is shower curtains. I can never keep straight, like, what part of the shower. If it's supposed to go in the tub, it's supposed to go outside of the tub. What part's supposed to go inside of the tub? One part's supposed to go outside of the tub. Like, I've been messing this up my whole life. I don't think I've ever used a shower curtain correctly. Do both go in? Do both go outside of the tub? Does one go inside of the tub, and the other goes outside of the tub? Like, I can't keep it straight.
I honestly don't even know. I mean, get the ones with the metallic things on the bottom of them, and they just latch onto your bathtub. You don't ever have to invest with them.
But one goes inside and one goes outside, correct?
Yes.
But sometimes I've been there where, like, the one that goes inside looks like it's made of paper. Like, there's no way this thing is supposed to be inside. So I put it outside. And then there's a mess all over the floor. And then I get in trouble about it. It just doesn't make sense to me. Do you have anything in your honorable mention?
Not much more than what we've already discussed. I will add, this is just me, but, like, turning on and off things. Like, sometimes I just forget to do it. It's more of a forgetful thing or, like, an OCD thing. Not necessarily I don't know what to do, but, like, I'll be like, did I turn that burner off? Did I turn the burner on? Or, like, I'll check it 5 times or, like, you know, I'll turn off the grill, the propane tank, and, like, I'll go outside 6 or 7 times and make sure I turn it off. So,
God, we're becoming the same person because I do that. I have, like, a nightly check where I make sure all the cars are locked. I make sure the grill, like, not the grill. I make sure the stove is off, the freezer is closed, the doors are locked.
I have a nightly check, and I have a morning check, too. Like, it's
oh, yeah. God. I don't do the morning check.
I do. I gotta.
Yeah, you're worse than I am.
You got well, problems, that's dude. Anyone who has ever had a flood knows what I'm talking about. I got to check the basement every morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I don't live in Detroit. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. We really appreciate it. It really helps out the show. And let us know what are some things that just always confuse you. I really feel like I should be able to, by now, get the shower curtain thing figured out. But it just hasn't happened yet. And I wonder if it's ever going to happen. Let us know if there's anything like that for you.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.